And Maureen, victims, a lot of work you've been involved in has been working with victims and people who have suffered tremendous hurt. Mm-hmm. And in all of this discussion, they, of course, shouldn't be forgotten.
Very much agree with what Brandon said, you know, about the lack of honesty. And just on that, about the victims thing, it says Avishai Margolis on the Holocaust, and I was at a conference, 1916, this morning, and it's a quote from this lady, and she said, "We must remember, because remembering is a moral duty. We owe a debt to the victims. By remembering and telling, we prevent forgetfulness from killing the victims twice." So I just want to echo what Brandon was saying about that. And certainly I can say now that I agree with everything that everybody said before me about what we can do, so it lets me off the hook. Whenever we were asked, you know, right, put down, well, what are the solutions? I mean, automatically you go into overdrive because there's so much that can be done. And I think number one is about how we self-evaluate about what we do or don't do that contributes to the problem or the solutions. And we have to take a hard look at ourselves about what we do or don't do. I think that the other thing is, as Brandon said, integrated education is a no-brainer. You know, the amount of work that we actually do in schools, and it's a tragedy, the amount of work that you have to do and the amount of expense that you have to go to bring groups or bring different school kids together, and the amount of effort and investment only for them to go back into their own community. So the integrated education. I suppose the other big issue for me is actually unpacking and looking at the deep theological roots of sectarianism. We can know sectarianism at one level, but I think that the churches, there's a huge moral duty for them to unpack the sectarianism, that institutionalized sectarianism, and across society as well, and how that's contributed to the problems. There's also something about being the alternative voice, how we can speak out and speak the truth, and also helping to give voice to others. Probably the most humbling experience for me is sitting alongside a victim, somebody who's been hurting so badly, and they turn around and they say, "I forgive." I don't think there's anything as powerful. Tonight, on the documentary on Tonight After Spotlight, there's a program called Bright Brand New Day, and a man called Donald Dunn, his daddy was blown to bits when he was 18, and he saw his daddy's body parts being lifted into a bag. 40 years later, he and his family have never been able to talk about that day. And the reverberations within the family, the reverberations with the children and the sisters and the brothers, and the power of that man to say, "I forgive the people who did that." I think that, the, you know, giving the voice to those people, those inspirational voices. But you know what happens here? It's almost like we try to avoid those powerful stories because they're so painful. As Damien Gorman would say, we take the scenic route around the dead. And I think that one of the things that we can practically do is sit alongside those people who have suffered. And that's about being there for them in their time of need. And it's very, very powerful way in which they can start to externalise and deal with their hurt. And the fact and the knowledge that somebody is willing to listen to them, as Helen Bamber would say, you know, in sitting alongside somebody who's telling their story or their pain, in itself is a meaningful and purposeful way to help them. So I think that that's one of the things as well. The other wee thing too, we need to do something about the media. We need to start challenging the way that the media do deal with things. We had a guy over last week called Phil Woods, and he's been informing the European Parliament on interculturalism. And it was really generous for him to come. He's one of our chairs of learning, and he came into the studios. They wouldn't let the organiser in to contextualise why he was here. He was automatically attacked when he sat down and said, "Who do you think you are coming here telling us what to do?" It was so inappropriate. It was so, it's that way of interviewing that's antagonistic, you know, and it's just inappropriate. So I think that there's something that we have to do and challenge the media. We've got to stand up to them. Another big thing for me is the patriarchy here that's not challenged enough, and the violence and woman, you know, that takes us way back, you know, took 2,500 years just to embed patriarchy. And we, you know, how can we even think about a shared future when we have got, you know, and social justice and all of that if we have patriarchy at the heart, we can't even start thinking about a shared future. So that is really important thing that we have to unpack. And for the homework part of what we can practically do, I work with this amazing man, Reverend Dr. Johnson McMaster, on the ethical and shared remembering, and Dr. Kathy Higgins. And it's a big learning curve for me. And he talks about five interrelated strands of peace building, which I'm not even going to start to go into, but it's back to what you talked about, you know, the economy. He talks about the need of the interrelated peace-building strands, socio-economic, socio-political, socio-psychological, and Brandon has talked a bit about that tonight, socio-ecological and socio-spiritual, and the need for us to unpack those within the, you know, within that all together, that you can't separate one without the other. It has to be the whole packet. So that's the homework.
Thanks very much, Maureen. Feel free as well if you have some of your own ideas, but I think in the, you were, yeah.
I did have a hand.
You had earlier, yeah.
I'm Barbara Hart, and wanted to follow on your comments and some of the others referring to leadership and a crisis of leadership or a lack thereof. I'd like the panel to reflect a bit on the Haas-O'Sullivan talks as a process and the nature and quality of that process. There are only three women in the room for those talks. Megan O'Sullivan, one of the facilitators. Jennifer McCann, by right, as a junior minister. And then the only delegate sent by one of the parties that's a woman is Naomi Long. So I wonder if you'd all comment on how we'd be better served by a process, not just these talks, but the parallel ones that are so-called Cardiff talks, the negotiations around parading and flags and all the rest, if we actually had a shared space that was inclusive of women's leadership, and really did have then the best sitting around the table to solve these problems.
Okay. Peter?
I mentioned a Let's Talk event that I'd help facilitate. We've had three. In those events, we've had either four or five representatives at the top table, and in two of them, the four or five were all men. In one of them, there was one woman. It was very quickly taken pointed out by the 16 to 18-year-olds who were in the audience, quite rightly. The political parties were asked to send whoever, and that's who was sent. So there certainly is an imbalance. I think it's a very complex issue of why that is. But without a question, and certainly when you come to parading, you know, that imbalance, I think, does affect the nature of the discussion and the quality of the discussion. So certainly something needs to be done about it. I'm not sure as a man what that is. But there are issues around it. I think when you come back to the other people in civic society, it's important they address that issue. Leslie sat forward, so I'm going to talk about, you know, the churches are one of those groups of people, and I don't think that's just about, not about Leslie's church necessarily, but I don't think inclusion is necessarily an issue just for women. It is an issue for everybody else in this society too. The nature of the debate when you talk about whether it be disability or sexual orientation, you know, the gay blood debate and so on, has not been a good debate in many ways. So I think there are big issues around inclusion. Gender is just one of them. It needs to include others as well.
Okay. Thanks. Maybe go a few people looking to ask questions. So go, and I'll come to all of you. Don't worry, you'll get your chance to ask a question. So.
Adrian Yelke, Brandon raised a very good point, I think, when he asked about why was Haas here. That's a question I'd like to get an answer to, a factual answer, if anybody has one. Why was he chosen to come and negotiate on this basis? I mean, if anybody's read the FT this morning, they may notice that he has an article on the Iranian nuclear talks. That's much more his area than our kinds of conflicts. So it's an odd choice. He's an IR expert. I mean, dealing with geostrategic stuff. I mean, you know, the symbols and dealing with the past and parades really aren't his topics. So, who chose him and why? Does anybody know? He was chosen by the executive, I presume, but maybe somebody can throw a bit of light on that. There were some interesting comments on today's Newsline, just very quickly, where what I noticed the word moving on was used about a dozen times by people who were asked about various difficulties that were happening, various dissident kind of activities, both in Belfast and Derry. And by the way, just to get round the point about, a year makes a big difference. A year and a half ago, Spotlight had a programme about a city called the City of Fear, and the city wasn't Belfast, it was Derry. And it was about Rob. So things change rather quickly in this place. And so we should realise that there are sort of contexts and times to this, and not all bundle all these things together.
Thanks, Adrian.
Sorry, that was media hype.
Yeah.
That was media, the distortion of media at the time for that A City of Fear, because it wasn't reflecting the truth.
Can anybody answer the specific question of why Haas was chosen?
Well, can I take a stab? Haas is a former special envoy. This is probably one of the roster of the previous envoys. I was surprised that Sinn Féin agreed to it, because he's not liked by Sinn Féin.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's what surprised me,
was
that he actually passed the muster.
I'm guessing.
Okay, thanks,
Alan. There's a lady as the
answer
here.
Right.
Sorry, my name is Anya McGrath, and I'm an independent researcher. And a year ago, I said Northern Ireland desperately needs, and I mean desperately needs, some sort of intervention from somewhere to help us with the issues that we're facing, because the current political setup and the people who are there aren't fit to deal with what we have to deal with. And we needed help from somewhere. And people are saying, why Haas? Well, I'm just glad that someone stepped up to the plate to help us out of this bloody mess that we're in. I don't care who it is, right? I really don't. I'm just glad that someone is here, because we can't do this on our own.
Okay.
The folk up there have proved that they can't do it. We need help.
Okay. You have the microphone, yes, you have.
I thought it was like the gentleman at the front. He stole my joke, actually. I would have used that one about the marching and obesity. So I've been doing exercises here. But we have to be serious. And so my name's Anthony Smith, and I live in Bangor, which is known, or was known, as the light of the world. That's not a joke. During the 8th, 9th, 10th centuries, not only Ireland was known as the land of saints and scholars, Bangor was known as the light of the world. It revived Columbanus. I'm not a religious person, but I do know my history. Columbanus would be thought of as a patron saint of Europe. His day was, I think, last Thursday, his saint's day last Thursday. Comgall fought, the reason why I'm telling you this, you're probably none of you know this anyway, because we did a vox pop in Bangor, and nobody knew this. Comgall founded the monastery in Bangor 558 AD. Other great people like Gall, who founded St. Gallen, who's the patron saint of Switzerland, was from Bangor. There were other saints from Bangor. The point I'm making about this, not just to give you a history lesson, which I think is part of the problem, which is the main problem in society, the whole structure of this society has been brought up in such a way that people don't know their history. I have a sister, because she's not here, a great girl. She was vice principal of one of the senior grammar schools in this society, on the Unionist side. She taught, geography was her subject. She was given one occasion just to help out a history lesson covering the history of Ireland, Northern Ireland. Irish history before the plantation was covered in about three paragraphs. After that, then it went on into the British history. The reality is, people here have been brought up in the dark and ignore not knowing their history and background. We did a vox pop, as I said, in Bangor. Nobody knew anything about Comgall, Columbanus, or anything. Bangor is overwhelming, and this is a point where other people may have mentioned, I'll just clarify a few points people mentioned on the stage here. Bangor is overwhelmingly Unionist, probably over 90%. And yet we have more flags flying in Bangor than anywhere. I don't know, there must be a shop selling these off cheap. There was a junction in Bangor on the way into Bangor, at Belfast Road, Brunswick Road. Flags were put up there no less than four times, taken down three times to the council, put up again. That is just a symptom of the deep underlying psychological damage which has been done to the unionist people. And that gentleman in the middle there said he was from Ballybean. My father's people are from D Street, so I'm at Trump's Ballybean, I would say. And then I grew up, and I spent my formative years in Craigie, showing a little like...
Make your point.
Well, it was supposed to be a discussion, so I'm not asking a question because you guys don't have the answers. The point, and it's true, because we've seen the same panelists on all these shows over and over, and as that gentleman down there, who's obviously carried off in despair, said, there's no answers. The bottom line is, our society here has been brought up in a state of amnesia by the ascendancy that ran this country for centuries and created the divide and rule approach, and it's worked brilliantly. And we're seeing the result of that. And it can be tackled. If we can't, you're going to answer. I'm going to tell you the solution now. Number one is the history, but number two is the point is to understand that all that what we have been discussing, seeing over the last 30 or 40 years, are symptoms. These are symptoms. And apart from the victims who my heart goes out to, the rest of them are just playing politics for the victims. And we want to create a society here where not only is sectarianism, which is actually racism under another name. The name for the Irish, as you know, the Catholics in the walls, are Tagues. Tague was a pejorative term for the Irish going back to the 13th, 14th
century. Could you...
Well, okay, what would you like?
Probably to stop now.
Well,
thanks. No, I think we get your point. We need to know our history better.
Okay.
And then we better understand some of the issues.
So, well, I haven't, but I haven't
please.
Seen them. Well, I've had mine up long
enough. I know. So please stop.
So anyway, okay. So
I've got your point. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So I think we should be having an open forum discussion among people like myself and others here who can actually understand and look down deep.
Thanks.
This lady over there said somebody can come and help us. We're only going to be able to help ourselves. Okay. Mr. Haas or anybody else won't be able to help us because they don't really understand the depth of it.
Thanks. Okay. Next. At the back there. Yep.
Thank you, Chair. Boyd Black, Labour Party. I want to bring us back to, I think it was Maureen's original comment about our sectarian institutions and our sectarian political parties and how that's an ongoing problem. And yet that has rather been left undealt with in subsequent discussion. I think if we're going to deal with these issues of sectarian issues of flags, parading, and the past, well, we have to address the fact that we haven't got a non-sectarian political framework in which to cope with these issues. And of course, from my point of view, the outstanding issue is the fact that the Labour Party of the state that we happen to be living in has suppressed cross-community Labour Party politics in this part of the world and is therefore in quite a large degree responsible for the fact that we all have been driven into our sectarian enclaves and we are offered no way out of our sectarianism by the what aspires to be the strongest political force in the state. And as I was sitting here tonight, I thought about the three women in London, the slaves that have been liberated. And the interesting thing about them was that they had joined a Marxist collective. I know something about that in my past. But suddenly they became enslaved in this collective to the point that they couldn't see that they were slaves. And I think the people of Northern Ireland, to some extent, have been enslaved by the fact that the Labour Party has suppressed Labour Party politics over the last 90, 100 years, and people have come to accept that as part of their existence, and they don't understand that their whole society has been distorted by this, and by ignoring it, they then run round in circles saying, how can we sort out these peripheral problems that stem from a fundamental distortion of the whole political setup?
Anybody want to make a comment?
Dominic? Can I say something controversial about history?
Yes.
We need less of it. I hear so often that if we teach our children proper history, that we'll solve a solution. I've got news for you. You won't. All right? You can't just teach history and get your way out of this conflict, because that history will tell you any number of things. There is not a right history which is going to rid ourselves and our children. I'll tell you what I think should be taught in school. Less history and more psychology, sociology, yes, anthropology and economics. Because in those disciplines are the tools which will much more quickly tell you about the issues that we have here. We have too much history with no nationalism taught in schools. They do not teach children what nationalism is. They teach children about the nation. We need less history and more social science taught in schools.
I'm sorry, but I couldn't disagree more. And the ethical and shared remembering a decade between 1912 and 1922, it set the scene for contemporary Ireland. And if you don't know where you've come from, and you don't know, it's almost like an amnesia. It's a way, you know, it's a bit like what you were saying, your comments about the deep sectarianism. It's like a fish in a go, and a goldfish in a bowl of water. The water's around it, and it doesn't even see or know or anything about it, but it's there because it's just everywhere around us. If we do not know our history, if we don't know where we come from, we don't know the stories that we live by. And we need to be aware. We need to know about imperialism. We need to know about aggressive nationalism. We need to know the theology that embedded the deep sectarian roots that we now live by. We need to know about the gender inequalities. And we need to know about our literary culture and all of those things that have fed into the state that we are in today. And knowledge is power. And knowledge and education is crucial, that our young people start to develop critical thinking skills instead of being led like sheep.
Thanks, Jack.